Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Hola, bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. I have such an amazing woman, una mujerón chingona, badass, that I've been following her for several years now. Cristina Rodriguez is the founder of Latina with Masters. And I'm just super excited to share this space with Cristina. And let me go ahead and introduce her. Cristina Rodriguez is the founder of Latinas with Masters, a graduate school advising community with a strong commitment in cultivating cultures of belonging and equitable opportunities for Latinx and women of color in business, housing, and academia. She is also the creator and host of Latinas with Masters podcast, a multicultural minded podcast created to inspire, empower, and education our community about navigating the hard rocks of higher education while embracing and preserving our language, culture, and identities. Cristina received her bachelor's degree in Latinx studies from San Francisco State University and her master's in business and marketing from Notre Dame de Namur University. I think I butchered that. She is the futura doctora, yay! And pursuing her doctorate degree in education from Mills College. A wife, mother of two, a dog mom. She enjoys a good book and a vanilla latte to reset and recharge. Yay. Listening to Bad Bunny and salsa music also does a trick. Bienvenida, Cristina, Dismantling Diet Culture.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much. Girl, I'm all about dismantling. So, you know, yes. Diet culture is something that, you know, I haven't had really the opportunity to talk about. And so I'm very happy to be on your podcast and, you know, you creating community and talking about conversations that are sometimes, you know, hard to have, you know, because it's not normalized in Latino society, you know, to talk about these type of things.
Absolutely. Thank you. And prior to our pre-recording, I expressed a lot of gratitude for the work that you're doing and also for reaching out. We had already tried to arrange to do a pre-recording, and you reaching out for me was a validation that there are people who are listening who are taking some hopefully nuggets of wisdom from what I'm sharing. And especially coming from another Latina who is willing to be vulnerable and open and trusting me, trusting the space to basically say, fuck being calladita. Like, we need to talk about things that have impacted our bodies and impacted our relationship with food. And it's not easy, like you said, because we numb it, we normalize it. And then we realize how much damage it has created in our lives and how it continues to manifest. So thank you so much, Cristina, for trusting this space to share your story. So if you don't mind, guide us, like, how was your childhood and your relationship with food and body? Es como una, pues sí, like a, tu historia.
Yeah, so I guess what stands out to me and the reason why I reached out was because I posted a like flashback picture of me, you know, in high school learning how to drive, right? And I was just thinking about, I'm very big of, storytelling and also like what pictures don't tell you. And that picture, even though I'm smiling, even though like I'm learning how to drive, there was a lot of insecurities that I was experiencing. There was a lot of things happening behind the scenes that a picture doesn't tell you. And one of the things that I wrote on there was that I love sweaters. You know, one from San Francisco. So a hooded sweater and a sweater because it's foggy, it's raining, it's misty. Like I love all that. But then I dug deeper and I was thinking of, you know, the other reasons why I would wear sweaters was because I was so insecure about my body, you know, and I was insecure about the way that my stomach looks because I didn't have a flat stomach, right? And I was also insecure about, let's be real, my butt, you know, like I have a big butt. And growing up, a lot of, you know, again, my family said it with endearment, but there was situations where, you know, they would call me big butt or they would call me nalgona or they would say like, oh, why do you walk like that? Or what size are you? Like, you know, and it, that really, I didn't realize how much that really affected on how I would, you know, choose to eat, how I would choose to dress, you know. Yeah, there was a point of time where I was like a tomboy because I would wear long, very long shirts, like t-shirts to cover my butt and then wear a sweater, you know? So I probably looked bigger than what I was, but to me, I felt comfortable. And when it comes to diet culture, you know, I grew up eating Nicaragüense food, you know, I grew up eating gallo pinto and, you know, salpicón and queso frito and maduro, all fried food, right? Oh my God,
sounds so good.
But I also grew up like Americana, right? I still ate the McDonald's. I still ate, you know, fast food, you know, and there was a time where, and I share this because I really do like sardines, but there were times where like my parents would only, like there was a time where I was only, like dinner was rice and sardines, you know, and, you know, I brought it up to my parents one day and I think they felt like I was shaming them and I wasn't, you know, like I legit like sardines, you know, it has to be the pica pica. It has to be from the Mexican, like, you know, carnicería part.
I want the recipe.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, that's, I enjoyed that. And it was a staple at one point because I didn't know that my parents, I didn't know we were poor. I didn't know that we were going through financial problems. Like my parents were divorced at one point and my dad, you know, did have to pay child support and help my mom and stuff like that. Like there was a lot of co-parenting around, but then with that comes like food choices, right? Of what you can and cannot eat. And, you know, one of the things that also kind of triggers me, I guess, or comes up to me is, you know, school lunch, you know, I never took school lunch, you know, or food from home for lunch, if that makes sense. I didn't have like the ham sandwiches or the fruit snacks. I would eat, you know, reduced lunch at school. And I now realize that that's a privilege, right? That I can provide for my kids, you know? And I also feel like I overcompensate because of that, you know? Like I legit give my kids everything and anything. It could be my last $5. It could be, you know, my last cash. It doesn't matter. Like, if they want McDonald's or if they want, you know, a toy or if they want to eat sushi that day, like I make it work, you know, like I don't know something about the way that I grew up and the things that I would hear, like, I don't want my kids to experience that, you know, and the difference between my parents and me is like, I have the privilege and the choice versus, you know, I understand that my parents didn't have the privilege and the choice, right? That was just the way that we grew up, you know?
Yes.
There was a lot to unpack there. Sorry.
Yes. Yes. No. Yes. So be unapologetic. I thank you so much for sharing this, and I'll backtrack and kind of guide the conversation. Do you think you said everything you said is so important and so valuable. And I want our community who's listening to understand that both me and you come from, you know, Latino backgrounds, but this is across the board. It doesn't have to be just Latinx communities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Body shaming is normalized throughout different cultures. It's not particularly to just one ethnic or racial group. The power that adults and other people feel, that entitlement to comment on other people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were When do you have a recollection of how old were you when that body shaming or that awareness that you became aware and hyper aware of your body? How old were you?
Yeah, I want to say I was like 10. So my daughter's age right now, right? I remember being 10 years old and again wearing the baggy clothes. That was the style too. Like TLC, Aaliyah, like I was, you know, that phase. But then there's always an underlying to that, right? It was like I want to go with the fashion and this hides my stomach and, you know, my backside or the way that my body is shaping because now I'm developing, you know.
And we don't, that's the whole part of the argument and also of acknowledging and dismantling diet culture is that we weren't born hating our bodies. We weren't born hyper aware of our bodies. We were conditioned by different institutions, like the family is one, and then of course
The
education,
media,
and then the
education, all
media
that, yeah.
and religion and so forth. And being like you said, being like como dijiste, nalgona, a big butt. So it's like your body, you're still a child who's developing, but then your body becomes like this hypersexualized body too,
It is, yeah.
So it's like you're in
I
this
can't imagine
transition.
having that conversation with my daughter and saying those things. And that was certain people, like you said, felt entitled to talk to a 10-year-old like that or to a 15-year-old or however age I was at the time, you know? And something I want to share real quick is that I remember, like, again, having these conversations like with my older brother. And I just remember my older brother saying, like, Chris, like, you're beautiful. Like, don't trip. Like, trust me. You're gonna get older, and there's gonna be women who are gonna wanna look like you, who want that big butt, who want the big lips,
See, that's right.
and you know, and just
That
the way,
strong, powerful
yeah,
voice.
exactly. And then, I mean, not to call people out, you know, look at the Kardashians,
That's
you know what I'm
right,
saying?
girl.
Like, look at all these individuals, and I don't feel entitled to also body shame them. I'm sure there's a reason behind that, but I'm more thinking of like, look what is now being normalized, right? Like, the you know the acceptance of being nalgona, the acceptance of having big lips or you know certain facial features that come natural to me, but they're wanting to look like somebody else. And I felt like I was at that stage too. I wanted to look like somebody else minus surgery. You
Yes, and you know
know?
what you're saying is so important, and I want to accentuate this because this is racialized. So as a sociologist and health coach, and I think it's so important for our community to understand that it's always okay when white folks or people who don't come from ethnic and racial communities who are doing this. So Black women have historically been racialized, have been sexualized, as the same have Latina women. So it's like it's not socially accepted. It's like that's like bodies of Black women and brown women, indigenous women, like they have to conform to a certain ideal. But when other folks are starting to do these surgeries, bigger lips, big butt, todo lo demás, then it's okay, right? So we need to understand that
Mic
body
drop.
image, that body image is shaped by our culture and our society. It's shaped by race. It's shaped by class. You know, that's another thing that you mentioned, and you know, your childhood and access and the tr life transitions that happen in your life. This is another important point. Life transitions happen. They're normal, like adverse childhood experiences, trauma, like
Correct.
it's a fact. But that has a direct impact on our well-being, on our relationship with our body, on our food. So going through that, you said that divorce and maybe at one point being in like in a single-headed household, of course it was going to impact your relationship with food, right? And ex you didn't say this, but you experienced food insecurity.
I did.
You
Yeah.
did. And
And I
that,
didn't know what that was at that age. I not be listen, I'm 38. I now know what food insecurity was and how it showed up in my childhood, which is why I overcompensate and make sure my kids don't experience food insecurity. Like my parents didn't know that, being immigrants from Nicaragua, what food insecurity was. They knew that having rice and beans was an essential staple. Having arroz, frijoles, crema, queso,
Canned
tortilla,
something.
you know, Pinot
The
Leo, let's
basic.
make the basics. We're done. We're
Yes.
good, right? But to
Yes.
society, right, is, oh, you're poor. You're eating
Yes.
rice and beans, or that's all you have. Like, I would have friends come over and my fridge wasn't fully stocked. And I would go to my friend's house. I'm like, wow, you have all these like chips and cereals and
yogurts.
And that's what I valued at that age because I'm a kid, right? We
Yes.
also see marketing, advertising ads, right, on TV that, you know, and so then you see it in real life, you know, in a household, and then you start putting two together, like, how come I don't have Oreos? How come I don't have Lucky Charms? How come I don't have this? And a little bit, my parents started coming around and getting that for me, but you know, it was
aware.
Very difficult. Exactly. They weren't aware.
And they, part of it is that, you know, or because we come from like working class immigrant backgrounds, we don't realize we don't have the language as a child. But just because we don't have the
Yes.
language doesn't mean that we don't understand that there's
Exactly.
differences. Like, we need to like give that agency back to children. They are experts in their lived experience and they understand that there's some differences. They might not articulate it that way, pero tú dijiste, like, you couldn't take the peanut butter and jelly sandwich to school. You know, you got the reduced free lunch in school, and there's so much shame todavía, like getting this free lunch in school. Again,
girl, I'm trying to qualify for free lunch at school. I'm like, single household. No, I'm
¿verdad
kidding.
Que sí?
You
That's
know?
true.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you also talked about so the food insecurity, and you said, you know, I really appreciate you saying, like, I have some triggers. And you know, you mentioned, you know, that of course, you know, coming from a working class background and how that shapes access to food and food insecurity. Y también, como dijiste, también I think that part of that trigger, and as an adult también, is the food scarcity. I still, and to be quite frank, I still struggle. I'm in my 40s. Girl, I'm part of the clean play club. I still have a hard time leaving the food, even though I'll eat it later as leftover for the next day. Deep down, my trigger and my trauma, because I also experienced food insecurity growing up and then in college, is like, me tengo que acabar la comida. And so I want to see if this is something, that food scarcity. Do you have that food scarcity mentality? Like, que necesito, like, tener el refri, como no tenías esto growing up, right? You didn't have a full stock fridge, or maybe didn't even have a pantry. Like, does this show up in any way now as an adult, as a parent?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I noticed that, like, I noticed my parents save food, right? So when they're not done, my mom would say, like, my mom's also diabetic. She has type 2 diabetes, right? And we could totally talk about that too and how that might show up, you know, in my bloodline. But she'll save food for later, right? And there's times where I'm just like, Mom, just throw it away. And she was like, no, you know, like, throwing away food is a sin, you know? So I was raised that way, right? So I can leave leftovers. I can eat leftovers, I should say, if I have it. But there's times where I just throw it away, just because I don't know. I don't know the psychology behind it, really, to be honest with you. I don't know if it's because I don't want to hoard her, or I want new food for tomorrow, you know? Another thing that comes up is that you had mentioned was, oh my God, it kind of came out of my mind, but for food is, you know what?
I went the clean plate club. No,
it's food yeah.
Scarcity?
There's foods that I would like to eat, but I really don't know how to combine it. I don't know. Yeah, it's expensive, right? Eating organic at the store, you know, it's very expensive. I do know that my kids, they would prefer to eat vegetables and a salad. Occasionally rice and beans, occasionally carne, but they're really good at eating their vegetables and fruits, and me giving them the choice of what they want to eat versus with me, it was like whatever we had at home. Okay, I remember what I was gonna say. How like shows up with me was, I remember my grandma would say to me, you know, or she would raise a lot of her grandkids, right? And it would be like a lot of us, which I totally get. But I remember her saying, like, oh, the food's ready. Are you going to eat? And then we used to be like, oh, ¿qué hay de comida? And she used to just like snap back and be like, aquí no hay un restaurante. Aquí van a comer lo que hay. Da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, whoa, okay. Like, I just stopped asking, right? But as a kid, again, how does that look like? You know, like, the trauma probably that she's having and now being brought down to me, I always remember that. And even within our cousins, we kind of like joke about it, but we would also be like, damn, I remember asking, you know, our grandma, like, what's for lunch or what's for dinner, and her just snapping back and be like, you eat what we have. This is not a restaurant, you know? And or there were times where I would say, like, oh, I don't want this. And she'd be like, well, then you're not hungry. And I'm like, well, I am hungry, but I don't want to eat this. And she would snap back and be like, well, then you're
Yes.
not hungry. You know, in Nicaragua, all we had was rice and beef. And then all that comes back into play
Yes.
again.
And then when you're
So,
a child, you're like, I, there they go again, or they're
but
gone.
I catch myself telling my daughter that. And again, it's a trigger for me, and I don't
Yes.
realize it until I hear it out loud, until I
Yes.
feel like I'm being repetitive when my daughter doesn't eat all her food. Because then I feel like, okay, es maña.
Sí.
Now you just want this, and now you just want that, just because you know I'm gonna get it for you, but you're not
Yeah.
really eating it. Like, I don't mind
Yes.
buying for it, but you need to eat it. And I feel like that is something that my parents did instill in me. Like, I don't mind buying it. If you're gonna eat this, I'll buy it, but you need to eat it. And I remember throwing away bread, and my dad was very upset. And he was like, did you see them give us free bread? I was like, no. Did you see me buy the bread? I was like, yes. So why are you throwing the bread away? And I used
Yeah.
to be like, well, I didn't ask for bread for my meal. And so then they were giving me bread to fill me up, girl. Like, you need to fill up with bread, you know? But I used to be like, I don't. So now, girl, listen, late 30s, my parents cook. ¿Quieren pan? I'm like, no quiero pan. Like, I'm just like, I don't want bread. I don't want to throw it away.
Fun trauma. Yes,
I got bun
right.
trauma.
That's true. You know what? I have a really good friend. She has Chile trauma. Like I hang out with her a lot. I'm like, and I said, you know what? I noticed that you X, Y, and Z. I think we need to kind of unpack this and heal. And listening to you is like, it's true. Like I know we're laughing about it now, but like, you know what? That is triggering. Like maybe yo no sé. Maybe you don't have a good relationship with bread right now. I don't know what that and like I don't know, like
Girl, I love bread. I love bread. I just know I can't be wasting bread. So that's why
Claro.
I have the privilege to be like, oh, it's okay, I don't want
Yes.
bread with my nacatamal right now. Like, you know, things like that.
That's true. I appreciate how you are really centering your privilege. I think when we're talking about conversations about dismantling diet culture, our own body and food and all this stuff, it's so important to recognize like our upbringing and our parents, like social class or caregivers or legal guardians, their access and social class and how their own childhood and their own traumas impact. Yeah, this is all related. We think like,
It's
how are
all
we gonna,
related, girl.
like, it's
Listen,
intergenerational.
my kids, when I ask them, and here's another difference, right? And a thing that's different. I ask my kids every day what they want to eat. Yesterday was KFC. I mean, girl, I feel like I should get like sponsored right now from all these like name drops I'm getting. But yesterday, my son's like, I want KFC. Okay, good. My daughter will be like, oh, I want sushi or whatever it is. Honestly, I wasn't that my parents never asked me, oh, ¿qué quieres comer? You know, they'll ask me maybe to the point where, like, oh, do you want spaghetti or do you want, you know, salpicón or something, right? Something like, again, whatever staples we had at the house, right? But my kids, like, I ask them now, and it's just wild to me
That's right.
that I'm having a conversation with my kids to say, like, oh, what do you guys want to eat today? You know, and it being just, that's being normalized in our household, right? But then again, then there's certain behaviors that come out and be like, well, now you got to eat your food. You want a KFC, you got to eat all the chicken now, you know? But then I also need to realize that that also comes, you
Yes,
know,
with your
that can
own
also
children.
show up like in my daughter or with my son being overweight maybe in the future, because now I'm telling them, like, you have to eat everything from your plate, right? So there's times where my son, I can see he's just like, Mom, I'm full from the fries and the chicken nuggets. And I said, okay, Papa, it's okay. Just leave it there for later. And he'd be like, okay. And he'll come back on his own and he'll eat it for later. My son eats every 5 minutes. My daughter eats every like 5 hours. I don't know. They have totally different like eating schedules. But again, how can I provide an equitable response, right?
To each of your kids to have unique
To each of
needs
my
and
kid, and
bodies.
not it be like a one size fits all
Yes,
response, you
that
know?
is exactly that's como dicen the nail on the, no, say, I don't know that saying in English, but you hit the nail with the hammer. I don't know. I think I might have just invented that right now.
No, there is a saying with that.
But you get the point. And now I forgot the train of thought that I was going to say. I forgot.
How I provide different responses to them
Oh,
with how
see.
they eat.
Yes. Yes. And oh, no size fits all. I think that's what you
Yes, no
said.
size fits
Okay.
all response.
Yes. So that is exactly what diet culture does. Exactly. And what does diet culture do? Well, it says you need to follow this meal plan. You need to have meals during these times of the day. Y'all, all that comes from a place of privilege, not only in terms of resources, but in terms of also time. And I love, and I just want to just applaud what you're doing because I don't know if you realize you're actually acknowledging the bioindividuality of each of your children. You just acknowledge the fact that your daughter eats a cada 3, 4 horas, that your son eats
More frequently.
more frequently. And that's what diet culture does. It strips us from connecting to our bodies. And as parents, we internalize those ideas and say, like, all my kids are gonna eat the same thing. They're gonna eat these amount of portions.
At this
And
time, at the
yes,
absolutely.
and then you know what? And that's because that's how we were also raised by our own families. And so my invitation to others who are listening, who are parents, is you need to trust your kids. You need to begin to trust your teenagers. And that means that you need to do a lot of healing and undoing about your own food and body image traumas and other traumas that you may have that may manifest in how you talk to your kids about food. So you're doing amazing. I'm just here to just tell you
Wow, girl,
you're doing
thank you. I'm
amazing.
like,
Yes,
I
because
never knew how
yes.
that would show up into a
Yeah.
perspective of diet culture, honestly, you know?
Absolutely. And part of and that's liberating because you're not oppressing your son and you're not oppressing your daughter. You're meeting them where they're at. And it's scary, right? Because you feel like, am I
I need to
doing
breathe
something?
for that one, girl.
I know. I know you can cry, like because it's like you're not doing anything wrong, but society and your family is telling you the contrary. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're breaking food traumas, amiga. You're breaking diet culture with your kids and yourself. You're like doing all this healing work, but no one is applauding you. A lo contrario, te van a empezar a criticar. Like, oh, your kids, we need to give the agency and power back to children and or to our teenagers. I need to listen as a parent to my soon-to-be 16-year-old son, to my 14-year-old daughter and my 11-year-old daughter. I can cook the same food. They'll eat different portions. Maybe they'll eat at different times. How in the heck am I going to tell them, cómete tu comida? I might be the one hungry, but they might not be hungry. And I need to honor and trust their bodies because
My
they are telling
daughter,
me.
absolutely. No, my daughter, I don't want to say she's like a vegetarian 100% because she does eat carne, but she only, in her mindset, she only eats carne if my husband cooks it or if my mom cooks it. Like, I think her mindset is trust, right? We've gone
Yes.
to restaurants and the carne is nasty. It doesn't
Yeah.
have flavor. I don't know, whatever it is in
Yeah.
her mindset, but my husband's barbecuing, my mom's making it, she'll eat it and that's it. Like home
Yes.
cooked meal carne, she's all
Smart.
for, right?
That's right.
And again, that is her journey. That is something
Yes.
that I'm embracing in her. My son will eat carne left. Listen, five
Left
minutes from
and
now, he wants another like ribeye or whatever it is. I was like, this kid is just like a carnivore, you know? But then he'll be like, I want tomatoes. I want cucumber. I want a salad, you know? And I also
Yes.
let them have that too, right? But
Yes.
I remember what I was gonna say was, it's a trip how, like, I ate a lot of cup of noodle. Okay, like
Same
listen,
here.
again,
Yeah. I was a college student.
affordability,
Yeah.
right?
That's right. Yes.
I buy cup of noodle now and my kids sometimes are like, it's okay, mom, you don't have to cook. I just want a cup of noodle. The fact, again, they have the privilege to, that's what they want to eat. I didn't have a choice. Like it was either a cup of noodle or it was, you know, Chef Boyardee, or there were certain things, honestly, like in a can, or I could put in a microwave or something that can be reheated in the
Yeah,
fridge. That's what I
accessible.
would eat. And my
That's right.
kids are like choosing to eat cup of noodle. And I know it's
Yes.
not healthy, but I'm just kind of like, wow. Like at 10 years old, I used to be like,
Yes.
oh my God, cup of noodle. Like, okay, I guess here I go, you know? And I
Claro.
would put like Worcester sauce in it. I
Yes.
would put mustard it. I don't know. I would like try to flavorify that shit, girl.
Yo le ponía tapatío y limón.
And I still do that to this day. You give me a cup of noodle, I'm like, where's the Worcestershire sauce? Yes. Can I get this? My dad, he would put like the little sopa maggi, like the little packets, right? The little fideitos. And he would put in an egg. Girl, I would be so full. I was like, that is the perfect meal for me. Like, again, not knowing that we did that out of necessity. Because eggs is a staple food I always had, right?
Yes.
Having the fideitos, well, that's like 99 cents. That was that was affordable, right?
Yes.
But again, not knowing that my parents were doing it because that's all we had.
Exactly. And
versus my versus my kids now choosing, like, oh, quiero una sopita. I'm like, okay, cool. We'll make a sopita, you know? Yeah. And they're totally fine with it. And I'm also okay with that journey for them, you know, that they're normal. That's their normal. You know, to say, I had a couple noodle and spaghetti, or we went out to eat and my dad cooked, or whatever it is, you know, like,
I love
the
that
whole journey is very different from how we grew up. And I also want to share this because I really just thought of this right now. There was a time, I swear I need to get sponsored because I'm going to be name dropping like so much.
No, pues ya mejor no nos menciones. I'm just kidding.
No.
Just go ahead.
So again, my dad, there was a time where, like, I started noticing my dad would buy me stuff that he would be able to afford, right? And so then we would buy, como se llama? It was, like, kids' cuisine, the little, like, TV like, dinner with the penguin,
right? Yeah, like pre-packed.
Pre-packed. It has, like, I don't know, or cornbread like or brownie.
Kind of thing. But they're called Lunchables now, pero como de esos kind of meals.
Yes, you put it in the microwave and it, you know, have, like, macaroni and cheese or whatever the little food chicken nuggets was in there. Or something. Exactly, right. And so I remember going to the store with my daughter. I'm like, oh my God, I totally remember this when I was little, right? And so I bought it so she can taste it, right? She didn't like it, but she was like, oh, but I think it's kind of cool how it has like a penguin. And like, she was more like interested in the packaging, right? Talk about marketing kids, right? So then my daughter goes to my husband, oh, Papa, when you were little, did you eat kids' cuisine? And he would look at us and was like, no, my parents cooked at home, right? Very different experience, right? His mom would make tacos de lengua, sopa camarón, like,
oh my gosh,
like
hungry.
Very chile rellenos, like really like Mexican homemade. Authentic homemade food. There was always food at the house, right? And again, very different how me and him grew up, you know. But I just thought that was funny because the way that he said it, and it was like joking, but he was like, no, I ate good.
See, pero like, so my gosh, there's so much to unpack, and we don't even have to unpack it, but it's just recognizing how even in your, like, now it's kind of like going into like relationships, right?
Exactly,
so not only like as a parent with your kids, food is about community, food is about love, food is about culture, food is about identity, food is political. There's so much behind food that diet culture has stripped that, has taken those meaningful connections. And I'm so glad to hear that that doesn't happen in your home, that you have, you know, a good relationship with food and your kids, that they have, you said diversified, right? I don't know if I said it or I wrote it down in my notes, pero no sé si dijiste eso. I just went, food is diversified in my notes, because you giving, having privilege and access because of your profession, and perhaps your husband have a, you know, a higher income now when you were growing up, that your kids, for them, it's normal for them to be like, I want this today. Maybe I want something fast food, or I want something that's cooked, or go to a restaurant, whatever, X, Y, and Z. And we need to normalize that food is food, not to place food on a hierarchy. Porque dijiste algo, and I want to like, in a very loving and compassionate way, tell you, like you said, oh, because it's unhealthy, like las maruchas, the cup of noodle. That's how we've been conditioned,
because I've been conditioned, right? Because of the sodium, right?
Yes, so the sodium and the carbs. I grew up eating maruchas throughout college, and I would do the same thing. I would add an egg. I would add veggies también, you know, like para que me rindiera, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like poor people's food, you know, working class. And if you're a student listening
to this, it's considered, right? It's considered poor people's food.
Yeah. And even I'm a Mexican. So in Mexico, this is it's still expensive, but it's a little bit more affordable than buying yourself like maybe a torta or something else, you know? I mean, maruchas are expensive in Mexico, but that's a whole different point. But my whole point here is for everyone is, it's hard. This is challenging for people to hear that. We need to move away from placing a moral value on food, morality. Like, food is just food. Who has had the power to say that there's a hierarchy, that this food is better and these foods are bad? And it oftentimes it's also coming from a racialized perspective, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a social class component and a racial component, and you know, many isms associated with that. So we need to normalize that food is just food, not to place it in a moral hierarchy, and understanding that food provides different nutrients. So the tojola marucha, the cup of noodle, okay, that's great. You're craving something else later, eat it. But like, don't add guilt as an ingredient to the marucha. Don't feel guilty or the bad.
I like that. Add guilt to the marucha. Yes, don't add guilt to the cup of noodle.
Don't add it. Like I go to the Asian grocery store and I actually buy the whole packet because me sale más económico. It's better.
For sure. I buy that too. Yeah.
It's like, it's the noodles, the packet noodles. I go to like the Asian store and I buy it. It's like $20, pero it comes with so many packets. Me duen como, I don't know, maybe a month or two, because I have three kids, right? And I'll do the same thing with you. I say, these are the options for food. What would you like? And they tell me none of them. I'm like, okay, so what do you want to eat? And then I'm not going to cook something else because of my time as well. But I said, do you want noodles? Yes. You want me to add eggs? What you want me to add? What do you want me to add? Oh, just the noodles. Okay. And I'll do it. And I mean, it's ready in less than 10 minutes, right? So it's normalizing that. Like, I want my kids, and I would love to say that hopefully, you know, they have a good relationship with food. I don't shame them. And I don't say junk food. I don't say this is healthier. I just say like, you know, what does your body need? ¿Qué se te antoja? Exactly. And it's okay, because you know what? If I don't create that safe space at home, which you're creating, you know that back in society, you can't protect them in school. You can't protect them from the fat phobia and all this from other, you know, from their peers. If we can instill this at home and that self-confidence, they're still going to struggle. I mean, your daughter, your kids, they're still going to struggle, but at least they know that your home is a safe space.
Yeah, I want to say that before we transition from the cup of noodle conversation, is I actually upgraded my cup of noodle selection thanks to my cousin, Chef Tone, my cousin Antonio. He put me on game on the, I want to say it's Japanese. It's called like Sapporo. It starts with an S, right?
The noodles? And is it the actual noodles?
Yeah, it's like the white packet. They have a black packet, a red packet.
Yeah. They have different flavors.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God. One day, listen, after the club, he was like, you want a cup of noodle type of noodle thing? And I'm like, yeah. So he did it. And pero he le puso tomate, cilantro. And I'm like, I was blown away, girl. This tasted like, like he made that from scratch, girl. And I was forever. That's all I'll buy. I mean, I'll buy the other one too, the maruchan, if they have it, because my daughter likes the shrimp version. But listen, girl, I feel like, yeah, I think internally, without even knowing it, now you telling me, is I'm normalizing that, you know, in a sense, even though like 5 minutes ago I said it's unhealthy, but I'm now seeing it. I still buy it. It's not like I'm not buying it, you know. So there's something there that I'm still accepting that food is food, and I'm also unlearning as I go. Not to say certain things, right? And catching myself from the triggers, right?
But it's so normal, right? It's okay, you know. It's like, come on, we've been conditioned for all our life. We hear it all the time at home from our own families. Like, they shame us. Like, I do all this work, and like someone will call me like a tía, and I'm making a arroz con leche. What's the first thing my aunt says? Oh, no comas arroz porque vas a engordar. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know? So like, you hear this stuff all the time. It doesn't matter how much you say it to family. It's so ingrained. They have their own belief systems. So that's another point for people. Like, you pick your battles, right? You decide who you want to engage, who's willing to listen to you. You're not there to basically shame people for their food choices. Like, that's, we want to move away from that, you know, completely. That's part of dismantling diet culture. It's understanding where those thoughts come from and beginning the unlearning. And it's not a linear process. Like, my relationship with food and my body, it's a lifelong healing, because I will be triggered, something might happen. Yes, absolutely. So eso de las maruchas and the cup of noodles. And I wanted to show you, actually, So I have a package.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep, that's the
Yes.
one, girl.
Yeah, this is the
Yeah.
one that I have. This comes in a package of five. So
My
you
husband
say
likes like the black one because it's like it like has the
the
most chile. It's the
spicy. See,
spicy
see.
one, and then there's the red one
Yes.
and the white one. There you go. That's the
Yes.
one.
So kind of to put closure on our noodles, and I think it's important because it's accessible. It's like it's
It is
accessible in
accessible.
terms of money and in terms of your time. You want to make a quick
We
dinner.
multicultural up in here.
Yes, we're multicultural. Yeah, the infusion of different foods.
The
I love
infusion,
food.
yeah.
It'll just to kind of bring like food can also be food is healing as well. Like, and I don't mean like okay, and I know this people have different perspectives from me, from as a Mexicana, as indigenous. I also think like food is healing because it nurtures your soul, it nurtures your spirit. And it's okay if that is like convenience food, if, whatever it might be, whatever gives you nourishment. Nourishment goes beyond the nutrients. That's challenging diet culture. So when we're looking at these noodles, it's like it's comfort food and a rainy day or a hot summer, lo que tú quieras. And then you get to decide what you want to add to it, if you want to add anything. So that's accessible. So we need to stop shaming people for eating noodles. The cup of noodles or the Japanese style noodles, para nada, or el arroz. It's like our body requires different nutrients throughout the day. You may want noodles a couple days, and then you don't want to have any for a couple weeks. That is okay. We're not supposed to like everything at the same time.
You know what I also want to talk about is I feel that, well, I don't feel like I know that my relationship with food has now changed with how I am, with how I intake food. How should I say that? How my body intakes food and processes food now, right? Because and I'm noticing that. So what I want to share is, before I had my daughter, so before or after, maybe it was after I had my daughter, I had my gallbladder removed. I had no idea what that entailed or why I was even getting these gallbladder attacks, right? It's more like a medical thing, right? With like the gallbladder stones being stuck, right? Again, had no idea of the process that you have a gallbladder, what the purpose of a gallbladder. At any event, I got it removed. And then they end up telling me that I had a fatty liver. And one of the doctors, I just remember him saying, "Oh, do you drink alcohol?" And I was like, "Damn, that's a little judgy how you told me." As a matter of fact, I do, right? And then again, going back to like having a fatty liver, has there's different like symptoms or different reasonings why you get diagnosed with fatty liver, right? But one of them is alcohol. But the fact that again, the doctor did not look like me, and it was a male doctor. The fact that he was the first one to say, like, "Oh, you must drink alcohol because you have a
Made
fatty
an
liver,"
assumption right away
I was
because
like,
of, yes.
so th that forever like stood in my mind. But what I really wanted to come to is that I notice how I feel after I eat food, especially when I'm going through like a stressful situation. Like I feel like sometimes I like diagnose myself. Like there was a point where I thought I had celiac disease, girl. I was like, oh my God, I can't. Like, and then I feel like I have like stress-induced IBS. I don't know, girl. Like I literally,
No,
but the reason
yes.
why I say that is because I know like if I'm going into an interview, if I'm driving, like if I'm commuting for 2 hours and this mindset of like, oh my God, what if I have to use the bathroom? Like I can feel the stressors in my body. And then guess what? I have to use the bathroom because I just told my brain that there could be a stressful situation where I may not have access to a bathroom. But so then there's times where I can't drink coffee before I drive. There's times I definitely switched my milk. I don't drink, even though like sometimes I do drink whole milk, but I switched to soy milk, right? It's the only thing that doesn't upset my stomach. I could be lactose. I don't know. Like I said, I'm self-diagnosing at this point, but it all comes down to stress. It all comes
That's
down
right.
to like how I'm receiving the food in my body. And it really, really like upsets my stomach. And then now that I'm getting older, now I have to make sure that I'm not pre-diabetic or that I might have type 2 diabetes, because I said my mom has type 2 diabetes with insulin. And I come from a family of like high cholesterol and high blood pressure. Those are all the things that I have to be conscious of. But again, it goes back to the diet culture, right? Now that you've mentioned it, doctora, I definitely feel like I have trauma with like meal prepping of some sort because I cannot stick to a schedule, right?
And you shouldn't.
I've tried every like quote unquote diet that's out there. I don't eat breakfast. You know, there's certain things that people are telling me that I'm doing wrong, but then I'm like, but my body doesn't want breakfast. I'm okay with just coffee or maybe
See?
like a banana. And that's okay for me. Like, I trust me, I'm not starving. Like, I'm
Yes.
fine.
Yes.
You know, and so
Love that.
again, there's a lot, again, to unpack there that I
Yes.
would love to get
I
your
love
feedback
that.
on because
Yes.
I definitely feel like it's my
See?
mindset with food and how I show up for myself is very different than how I'm showing up for my kids. But I feel like with me, it's
Yes.
more like mental and emotional, if that
That's
makes sense.
right. No, and thank you. Yes, absolutely. You know, and I
I
definitely
just gave you
want
my whole like medical history.
Verdad que sí? No. Love this. You
And
know,
diagnose, go.
Verdad que sí? Yes, there we go. Okay, number one is really we need to hold the medical industry complex accountable and, you know, and really continuing to perpetuate harm through the language that they use, not acknowledging their positionality and their privilege and conscious and unconscious biases that operate, you know, that the liberty that this doctor basically made an assumption based on your gender and your race. And that's never okay, right? So who has power to say what about your body and make some assumptions and conclusions? And that has a big impact on the type of treatment people get because people will look at your body and say you're overweight, right? Or use the word oh, which is obese, which is, you know, it's
Which
that.
supposedly I am, according to like medical,
Yes,
I'm obese.
and that is actually not even accurate. The IPM is based on thin white people, right? It's not for people of color. So I'm not a medical doctor, I'm not a dietitian, I'm not a nutritionist, but I can tell you, go do your blood test. Y allí tienes tus resultados. Tu peso no tiene nada que ver con tu salud. So we that's another and that's me saying that people I get so much hate on social media when I say like your health is not based on the size of your body. Your weight is not It doesn't correlate or it doesn't translate to health. Health has nothing to do with the number on the scale. But because that's part of the wellness industry and diet culture, people in bigger bodies automatically, it's like, oh, they eat unhealthy. You know what? That's only a small percentage of what you eat. Genetics plays a big role. And then I go to number two. You said stress. You know yourself best. Yes, people are saying you should have breakfast in the morning, or you should this breakfast is the most important thing in the morning. You know, I heard that growing up también.
Girl, I tried for the life
Pero
of me. Smoothie,
no.
boiled eggs, toast. I cannot.
Tu
Breakfast is
cuerpo.
not my jam.
Yes, exactly. And you embracing that and being unapologetic about it is telling people, don't tell me. It's like, are you telling me, am I telling you how to dress, what to wear? What? So don't tell me what to eat and when to eat. I know my body. And you're like, wait, do I really know my body? You begin to even gaslight yourself. Like, do I really know my body? Maybe they're right. It's a disconnect. And that is purposeful because who benefits? Capitalism.
Oh, for sure.
Because you're gonna go do the meal plan y todo. No funciona. No funciona para toda la gente. So my point here is you continue to do you, continue to unlearn and unpack, and you're doing it. You're doing an amazing job, Christina. You're already tuning into your body's cues of you're like, maybe I'm lactose, like you're self-diagnosing. You don't need to go to the doctor. Like, well, of course you'll go to the doctor plus do regular checkup y todo, but like you just need to feel it in your body. Do you feel a reaction? Do you get like discomfort? It's like, are you it, like, ¿cómo se dice? Gas o sientes la garganta, like you know, like agruras. I don't know what that means in English. When you eat something and it causes some people
Oh,
like
like
throat,
heartburn or
heartburn, you
like
know, the heartburn or in your stomach. Your body's already communicating with you that there's some discomfort. Maybe it's the food, or maybe you're so freaking stressed. You just had an argument with your partner, or you just had an argument with a colleague, or you just someone flipped you off on the road and you're all stressed out and mad, and you were really hungry, and now you're not.
Yeah,
Right?
absolutely, right?
Like,
It's all in how it shows up in my body.
yes, yeah,
And I just remember
exactly.
my doctor telling me, and a lot of people telling me, well, not my doctor telling me, that my doctor was giving me the response I'm about to tell you, but people were telling me, like, oh, if you want to lose weight, because by what I say earlier, I love vanilla lattes. I love vanilla, like any coffee shop I would go to, I will like buy and critique a vanilla latte, honestly.
So they
I
tell
feel
you to
like,
stop drinking it.
yeah, I feel like that is like, you know, my taste buds. I know what I like. But anyways, I was told like, oh, you can't put the creamer in. You should stop putting the creamer in. You should stop doing vanilla. You should do this, right? And one day my doctor's like, do you drink that like all day, every day? I was like, no, of course not. I drink it like, you know, maybe twice a day, if that. She's like, have the vanilla latte. Put the creamer in your coffee. Like, that is not going to be the deciding factor of you know, wanting to lose weight or needing to lose weight, or how your body's going to react to sugar or whatever it is, right? That I was having a conversation with my doctor. And I was just kind of like, it was so liberating to hear that because I knew that, but I was also conforming to what, you know,
Yes, everyone else.
society was telling me what I shouldn't do when they're sharing of like, oh, these are all the foods that I cut out. And I'm like, yeah, but I love all those foods. But then the food that you want me to eat, I don't even like those foods. Again, it's almost like my body was dismantling,
I
rejecting the South Beach diet and the Atkins diet
that.
and the keto diet and all these other diets that
That's
I
right.
legit tried. At the end of the day, girl, I just eat. There's times where I just want a salad. I just want like, you know, a salmon sushi roll. There's times where I just want cereal, or there's times where I'm like, yeah, I want a full meal.
That's
And
right.
I allow myself to have that, you
I
know?
love that. Man, I love that you're at a different place. Tell me where you're at now. Like, what was that journey from moving from those diets to
Yeah.
where you're at? Because I'm sure a lot of people who are listening can resonate with your experience. ¿Qué has hecho? ¿Qué hiciste para estar aquí?
Yeah, I feel like I think it's just li really, well, I started to listening to my body on how I showed up when I was healing traumatic experiences, right? And with that, it transitioned into food, if that makes sense. So, you know, again, talking about my childhood trauma, talking about, you know, me showing up as a Latina in housing, on how I couldn't wear the red lipstick and the curly hair and the way I was supposed to look, right? All that affects on how I was intaking food,
That's
right?
right,
But
exactly.
then now I started really kind of thinking about like, huh, like maybe it's also the way I receive stress, you know? So again, kind of like when my hands are sweating or I'm feeling my back tense, you know, all that comes with food too, right? And there's times where I'm like, I don't want to eat. I mean, I just got laid off, I just got fired, or whatever I was going through within the last 2 years, it would all affect the way that I would eat. Either I would hella eat and I would eat like my son every 5 minutes, or I would eat every couple of hours like my daughter. It was different every day. And I had to learn to embrace that journey, but to what I naturally felt was a healthy journey, you know? And even just getting the real feedback from my husband, you know, and it'd be like, hey, I feel like I'm eating a lot, or I feel like I'm not eating enough, you know, and him, 'cause sometimes we don't know what we're going through. Like we're doing it, but I may not consciously know that I'm eating every day, or consciously not know I'm not eating, right? Because I'm so busy. And, you know, just getting that honest feedback and then having those vulnerable conversations with your partner to say, I feel like I'm eating a lot because I'm stressed out because of this. Or there's days where I'm not even hungry, you know? So having someone to be like, oh, hey, babe, did you drink water today? Or like, hey, what do you want to eat today? Do you want to eat that? You know, like having someone really support you and kind of observe your journey and not really telling you what you need to do, but just being your reminder of like, hey, how you feeling today? Like, you know, almost like how I am with my kids, right? I'm like touching and feeling and getting feelers out. I need those feelers too, right? And I think because growing up, I've always been the big sister and I've always been, you know, the amiga to defend everybody. I really haven't had anybody defend me or take care of me, even when it comes to food, right? And so I really rely on my husband, and my immediate family to tell me like, oh, Chris, you look good. Like, are you losing weight? And there's times where I'm like, oh yeah, I walked a couple days today. Or there's times where I'm just like, really? Because I feel like I've been eating all day. Or, you know, there's times where sometimes you kind of, you know, judge yourself a little bit. Yes. But hearing those affirmations from other people like, no, you look good, or, oh, wow, you know. But then, you know, as a mom, your mom was like, oh, está estresada, ¿qué pasó? ¿Y por qué? You know, and to not worry her, mm-hmm. I tell her like, no, I'm okay, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, but as a mother, you always know when your kid is going through something, right? Yes. And so it's almost like the way that my mom shows up for me is she may not be like the touchy, lovey feeling mother, but she'll come over and she'll be like, oh, te cociné un arroz, quiere que te haga una ensalada, voy a cocinar, you know, like for her it's cooking. And that is her way of showing like, okay, you may not want to eat it right now, but you're going to want to eat it later. And so here it is for later. Again, right? Saving yes, food
yes. for later. That's right. You know, you touched such an important topic, and maybe that can be our pivot to closing, because I know we can talk a long time and I want to honor your time, is building community, right? Part of dismantling diet culture and healing our relationship with food and our bodies is surrounding ourselves with people who are going to hold us in this journey, who are going mm-hmm. to be loving and compassionate and not judge us. And I'm glad to know that you have a partner and that you have family. And for people who are listening who don't have that support, that you're on this journey on your own or you lack that support, that's why there's this podcast, you know, my social media platform. Mm-hmm. But also, like, that's the hard step, is reaching out to people mm-hmm. and creating those safe spaces. Do a detox of your social media, like for mm-hmm. everyone here, like accounts that make you feel bad about your body or your food, who are like, if it's triggering you or making you feel bad about what you're eating, then maybe you should mute that account for now and mm-hmm. follow others. Like, you have to be proactive in this healing journey, because it's like you get sucked in so quickly, right? By family. And you know, another thing that I wanted to say, and that I noted, is, and you said this, and it's so common, right? And it's part of diet culture. So it's, you look great. You look great. Are you losing weight? This is so common in our communities that we, like, a veces no ni piensas. You're like, they don't even know you're losing, but they don't know. What if you have an illness? What if you're depressed?
Yeah.
And they're complimenting you. So that's another thing for everyone who's listening. Mm. Don't compliment people on their bodies. Like, it's, you have no right to talk about other people's, like, to say, like, you could talk about your body, but not about other people. And we got to be very careful and sensitive, because you don't know what's going on in their life. What if, you know, I'm thin. I'm privileged. I'm thin. I live in a thin body, but I know, like, when I'm sad and depressed, like, even me as a health coach, I have a hard time eating when I'm sad. Like, the last thing I want to do sometimes is eat. Mm-hmm. There's been times when my grandmother passed away, I literally could barely had a mm-hmm. smoothie. And yeah. maybe I love having eggs for breakfast. Ni eso podía, no me podía pasar la comida porque tenía tanto duelo. I would cry so much. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat. Everyone was worried in my home, like, you need to eat. You're not, I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I was depressed. I was just a mess. And my body was just like, and I just kind of had to help myself and be like, okay, you know, and I would say, Hortensia, you need to eat. And I would grab the smoothie. And I would take a sip while I would be crying, because I knew I needed to feed my body. And I knew that that was only temporarily. But if someone would have complimented me that I've been losing weight, I would have been like bawling, like, how dare you? I'm going through grief, you know?
Yeah, I also want to add real quick is that I've heard that a lot. And thank you for bringing that up, because I hear a lot of people say, oh, she's pretty for being 60 years old. Oh, she's pretty yes. for being Latina. Or, oh, yeah. she's pretty mm-hmm. for being Black, right?
Yes.
And at the time, again, that language is normalized, right? So I would catch myself saying that. This is when I was younger, of course, right? Like, oh, she's pretty for whatever, right? And again,
or she speaks so well for being blah, blah.
Thank you, right? The microaggressions of that, right? But now it's like, I feel like, you know, if you are going to make a statement, I guess my advice is you can compliment somebody like, oh, Dr. Hortensia, like, I love your hair.
Yes, yes.
Period. It shouldn't have to be like, I love your hair for being,
yes,
uh-huh. you know, like, you're adding more to it. Like, for being what?
For being Latina, for being Native American,
whatever it is. Like, why do you feel the need to like add more identities, you know, for whatever? Like, there are, especially being Latinos, right? We all look differently. We all look the same in certain, you know, situations, but it doesn't mean that you have the right to kind of, you know, validate what a Latina looks like, or what a thin person should look like, or a healthy person should look like, for that matter, right?
Exactly. Because thin people don't necessarily, someone who's in a thin body and someone who is in a bigger body, like, you don't know, or we're normalized to say that the thin person is healthy and the person who's in a bigger body is not. That's just how it's set up. And that's that's very unfair. And like, we need to catch ourselves, right? Not like us and like, or internalized. This is for everyone. Any internalized fat phobia, any internalized ism, classism, homophobia, transphobia, racism, etc. Like anti-blackness, anti-indigeneity in our Latinx communities, like that manifests itself so in so many ways, and it has an impact on the people who are experiencing those microaggressions. Because then, like you said, then you're gonna do a performative like of how you show up to the world, masking yourself so that you're not threatening to other people, or that you kind of como se dice este no meshen como what's that word in English, darn it,
blend in,
right? Like that you kind of blend in, that you're not an out, like, yeah, but sí que it's visible, because some of us have visible markers. We might be more darker skin, or maybe in a bigger body, or maybe like I'm tall, like I can't hide, you know, that's something I struggle with, like I can't hide, so I might as well embrace my height, you know, like why shrink? You know, so like taking that space unapologetic comes with healing your any traumas and your body and your food. So it's all connected to how we show up in the world.
Absolutely. No, it really does. Like I said, and especially as a mother, or even if you're not a mother and you're just an individual person navigating a space where, you know, you're trying to heal yourself or trying to find a purpose or whatever that is, right? You're going to find whatever healing or, you know, whatever journey is, you know, embraced within yourself, if that makes sense, you know. I know we talked a lot about like motherhood and stuff like that, because, you know, we're both mothers and stuff like that, but, you know, there was a lot of things that I didn't talk about, you know, where I didn't have my daughter till I was 27, so my entire college years was very
Let's talk
conversation about conversation we could have had.
We should. I think this is, let's do part two, because I went through a lot too in graduate school when I decided to have kids, and what that meant as a woman of color in higher education, and what I experienced and the impact that it had on my body, and that I'm still healing a lot of that trauma in my head in terms of how I even show up.
Because, oh yeah, girl, we can definitely talk
about
legacy.
Yeah,
motherhood and academia. Right? What does professional look like, you know? And I definitely had body shaming with the clothes. I was told to wear, you know, suits and blazers, but I didn't like the way that I looked in them. So how did that affect me and how I showed up? Listen, girl, we can definitely talk about that. That's a whole other thing right there.
For everyone, that's rooted in white supremacy and which is the professionalism.
I know there's times where I have PTSD with like, should I wear hoop earrings? Should I wear a blazer? Yes. And I catch myself having these conversations, but at the same time, if I wear a blazer or if I wear this, it's because I want to.
That's
not because I'm being told to, because that's also fashionable. Like, I want to dress nice. Like, I want to feel good. Yeah. And there's certain clothes that make you feel good.
Yes.
And just to kind of like sum up, when I went to the education conference, the first day, I did show up with like, you know, like a dressy shirt and a blazer, and I wore like some, you know, like just, you know, some very comfortable shoes, right? And some slacks, because I wanted to, right? Then I made a comment to somebody and I was like, you know what, tomorrow, like, I just want to be a little more laid back. Like, I want to wear my hooded sweater. Like, I've always wanted to do like a hooded sweater with like a blade. And they're like, you should totally do that. It's like, what? I will. The next day I showed up like that, right? With my brown hooded sweater and with like this brown plaid blazer, because I wanted to, not because it was expected of me or because I was told this dress code. Later on, I ended up taking off the blazer. One, because it was hot in a lot of the rooms. But two, it was like, you know what? I love being in a good old, you know, hooded sweater. And the only difference between Christina, you know, 10, 15 years ago was, even though I may have still a little bit of my insecurity with wearing a, you know, the reasons why I wear a hooded sweater, I just feel comfortable being in a hooded sweater. Like that is just me, like my personality. I also feel like it provides less intimidation, you know? Like there's a lot of people that came up to me and was like, oh, are you Christina from Latinas with Masters? Like, you know, and maybe the first day they felt like not coming up to me, but I don't know, the second day I got a whole bunch, you know, and I'm like, hey, maybe it was my style. Like, hey, she's in a hooded sweater. She's super chill. Like, let me go up to her.
Yes, absolutely.
And
I
I
love
love it when
that.
professors would show up like
Yes.
in jeans or just like,
Same.
just being, you know, like their authentic selves. I find the
Yes.
beauty in that.
Yes, and there's a lot of nuances, and that's why we like part two, ¿verdad? Like there's so many nuances around like professionalism and dress code and how people of color, anyone who doesn't fit this normativity of bodies that are socially accepted in higher education or any place, you are exposed more. You are more likely to be scrutinized. So it's just to acknowledge that there's levels of privilege associated of how we even show up and when we also feel safe to show up in those spaces. I mean, so it's like it's very nuanced, and I love that you did it because you also felt safe and you were also claiming the space. But maybe it would have been different si estuviéramos en otro lado, right? So it's like it's understanding like, am I safe to do this? Am I do I and you were with other women, so son muchísimas cosas. So this is my invitation for other people is to try to be your authentic self and to show up in the world unapologetic about how you dress, if you wear the lipstick, the big hoops, lo que tú quieras, like do it, embrace that. But also like, sometimes we have to be strategic how we show up in certain spaces because we might not have the bandwidth of the microaggressions. Maybe you're like, you know what? Today I'm having a tough mental health day. I am just not gonna, I don't have the capacity, to do this. And so whatever. So it's just like saying like it also depends cómo estamos. Am I willing to do the battle? Like if someone says something, or things like that of that nature. I don't know if
Exactly,
that makes
exactly.
sense.
No, that is everything that we are still experiencing. You know, I feel like we continue to experience that. Do I have the bandwidth to have this capacity today? Me showing up in a hooded sweater, yes, I had the capacity to to have a discussion if, you know, wearing a hooded sweater is professional or not. And I'm not to say like you need to have a degree to look professional by any means, right? But if you're gonna go base it, if you're gonna, you know, I guess stereotype somebody because they're wearing a hooded sweater, you know, and then ask for credentials. Well, I have the credentials and I can wear the hooded sweater. Again, not saying that that should be the actual, you know, claiming part of it, but that's why I'm so big on just, you know, I don't know how to explain this, but like I understand the privilege that I have of having education and having a degree that unfortunately my parents didn't have the conversations. You know, their conversations were different, you know, where they were, you know, validated based on having a degree or not. And that's why they had to show up in a professional clothing of in their field, right? But I'm here also dismantling that,
That's
you know?
right.
And so then if you're gonna base on the way that I look professional, or I'm not educated. Well, I am educated and I have a degree, which you validate, right? Academia, and I can still show up in a hooded sweater. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like that was kind of like the message I was trying to like
I
come
love that.
across.
Yes, and I love that. Like, and I hope that people who are listening continue to show up in the world unapologetic on how they're dressing or what they wear. And and like I said, some people it might be very harder depending on their marginalized identities. If you're queer, if you're trans, and
Oh,
like gender
absolutely.
non-conforming, it does. There's a lot of nuances to that. But to kind of wrap up, all this is connected to diet culture. Like people are thinking, what is this work and dress? It has everything to do. Like we any topic that has any topic out connected to diet culture, because it's understanding systems of oppression, it's understanding white supremacy and how it's manifested not only in food in our body, but even how we show up in the world. So thank you so much,
You're
Cristina, for
welcome.
sharing. Anything else I know we have so much to share as a part two, pero algo más que quieras compartir, que no te pregunté.
No, you know, I've shared a lot, you know, on your in your space, and so I appreciate you welcoming me into your space and being vulnerable, and I definitely felt safe, you know, having these conversations that sometimes, you know, again, we don't have the capacity to have these conversations in a classroom. I know I didn't talk about this in my classrooms. But it also is something that like I did not get a chance to talk about in my master's program, right? Or even in my undergrad, or again in academia and stuff, you know, and definitely not in corporate America, right? But the important thing is that we're having these conversations now. And I'm very grateful that you allowed me to share, you know, my story. And you know, definitely feel free to reach out if anybody feels a certain type of way or like, hey, this resonated with me. You know, if you just want to talk and share, that's what the Latinas with Masters community is about too. You know, it's creating a space that I didn't have when I was going through, you know, higher education, you know, and it's something that I'm creating now, even for myself. As you can
That's
hear, there's
right.
a lot of things that I'm still working on, you know, and I rely on mentorship like Doctora Hortensia. You know, there's a lot of people that I also look up to help me heal and to help me, you know, show up authentically in this space, you know, and you're going to keep on healing, right? It's going to keep on being unpacked and unpacked and unpacked, but you need to have, I guess what I want to say is, I want you to have the mental and emotional and physical and healthy capacity to have these conversations. And if you feel triggered or you feel like, whoa, I'm feeling a certain type of way and I don't know how to come across this, that is okay. That means that there's something there to unpack and seek to your community or to a professional to help you, you know, manage what you're experiencing.
Absolutely. Muchísimas gracias. So let us know, please, where can they find you? Where are you on social media?
So you can follow me on all social media platforms at Latinas with Masters. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm not on TikTok for all these crazy reasons, but my website, latinaswithmasters.com. And of course, you can always listen to the Latinas with Masters podcast.
Wow, muchísimas gracias, Cristina. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Nos vemos la próxima semana. Take
Peace
care. Muchas
out.
gracias.
Bye.
Adiós. Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, at Dr. Hortensia Jimenez.